Marie
and Georgia,
and we are the host of the podcast series called Everyone We Wish You Knew.
On a monthly basis, we invite people from the performing arts environment in Denmark to talk about their practices and artistic work.
We are curious about the work of dance artists, choreographers, performing artists, critics and scholars who contribute to the making of what we call the Danish dance scene. Today we present you an episode with a little twist. Since we have invited two guests at the lab station, or in Danish, forsøgstationen, to talk about their latest collaboration, a dance piece called Sure. The piece was presented in the end of January 2019 at Bådteatret in Copenhagen, and we use that piece as a point of reference in our talk. Welcome.
Thank you.
Third episode, and we're very happy to have you. We would like you to introduce yourself with a full name
and a bit of your background, perhaps.
Yes. I am Anna Lea Orø, and I work with Amalia Kasakov, who's sitting next to me. We both graduated from DDSKS, the National School of Performing Arts in Dance and Choreography, almost soon 2 years ago, and now we have been working together. Well, we worked together in school, and we have been working together after we graduated, so for some time now. I feel like what I do is very connected to what Amalia do. I don't know who I am alone, almost.
Yeah, and I'm Amalia Kasakov, and Anna's partner in many ways. And I guess that's the big part of our relationship, that we really chose to be a couple, to live together, to work together, share each other's clothes, kind of doing everything together since we graduated. When we moved to Paris and lived in France for some time and traveled around since then.
I would though be interested to hear if you both have a dance background, because you started, you say you both graduated from the Danish National School of Performing Arts, but you also had a dance input before that, both of you?
Yes. So I'm originally from Finland, and I started my dancing there, yet it kind of became much more sort of official and concrete when I moved to Copenhagen. Now, for the first time, I think almost 8 years ago, or maybe it's actually even more, maybe it's 9 years ago. And then I studied here for 1 year, and I went to study at SEED, which I then decided to end after 1 year. And after a little detour, came back to Copenhagen and did the education with Anna.
Yeah, I came straight from high school into the dance education, and I had done very like hobby dancing. So it was a big, very overwhelming to suddenly have all this technique. So I hadn't danced so much before, not in like a professional way. But I had done like, at that time there was something called Dansevækstuset at Dansehallerne, which were great, which was more like improvisation and stuff, and I loved that. And that was how I got to know about the school.
And the reason why we invited you was because we saw your performance Sure, and we would like to for you to describe shortly this performance you created.
Well, Sure is a 1 hour long dance performance that is set out as a sort of melancholic rave, which might also give an impression of a very clubby atmosphere. And I think there are elements of it, but I think why we would even mention the word rave is maybe the loopiness and repetition and kind of trying to create an endless space with lights, music and dancing. And it is a dance that holds a space for loss and this kind of possible melancholy that these different elements possibly create. Not necessarily, we never wanted to insist on it being sad, but...
And where does this melancholy came from? Like, what was your inspiration to create this?
I suppose it begins from a very personal place of both of us having an emotional year and me having a very personal entrance to loss, which this piece is also dedicated to my dad, who passed away very recently and has been sick for kind of the whole time that we were making this piece. So there's a sort of heaviness from that in the dances themselves that we kind of, I think we carry the traces of that, those emotions, even though we never want to present sadness through them, or what's the word? Express sadness through our actions. But I think we feel it, and maybe that also becomes sort of the material where we work from and is in the fibers of the dancing.
Mm. Yeah, I think it was nice for us to try to see how you could allow emotions to be in the dance in a way that wasn't like, now I'm expressing this feeling, or that you see it in the face, or but just simply like, yeah, if you have created a dance that had an emotional trace, you could actually work with it. And that you can, that it does radiate out without you expressing it, or without it being a certain emotion, or but it has like the dances carries traces of how it was made, because that's the thing, like then we really formalize the dances, like it's a very set dance piece. It's not improvised. It's really, we know these dances, we have done them many times, which I think also creates a kind of distance in it, that we are dealing with these big emotions, but then it's also just a dance and it's very formalized. And I appreciate this kind of distance because I don't want to be on stage expressing my emotions, but maybe I do it through just repetition and being with Amalia on stage. Yeah,
and it's great to hear the starting idea of the piece, and we will get back to the core of this work. But since it is, from the beginning on, you talk about yourselves as a couple, and there was a question about how your professional collaboration started. But I think it would be valid to take the professional away, because I can feel that it's a collaboration that goes much further than just the choice of working together.
Mm-hmm.
So would you like to share with us how this started? How did you find each other?
We did a very random project together.
Yeah.
That started the second year, actually,
yeah,
of school, that we kind of finished in the third year, which is very different from what we made now. It was a completely improvised piece. A very small thing we did. And I suppose from then on we started making decisions together, and like it became very clear when we graduated that in this kind of uncertainty that we were entering, we chose each other and to stick together, and what changes were going on in our lives as well. Like also a big thing of finishing an education, but other things as well that were changing. Then it felt important to find this kind of safety with someone.
Yeah.
So I think it's been very much like a negotiation, but actually it's been easy to follow each other in our lives since then and make decisions to move to Paris or elsewhere together.
Yeah, I think there are some places where it really clicks for us. It just kind of falls into place. You know, when you meet someone, you just have the same pace. It's just like things are just easy. But then we are also very different. So it kind of goes in and out of these two. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why it really works for us very well. Yeah, that you have you fall into sync, but you also have the friction. And then, as you said, really the graduating into a field with a lot of insecurity, really not knowing how to, wanting to make dance and art, but not knowing how, and feeling very insecure in it. And then just choosing to stick together as like, that's what you can hold on to.
Yeah, that makes total sense.
Yeah.
To have something that's not precarious as the rest of the field.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you mentioned a couple of times your trip to Paris.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you choose to move to Paris?
Very random.
Yeah, again. I think we just needed to get away.
Yeah.
Do whatever else. And then I think one day we were just like, why not moving to Paris?
Yeah, I remember you had done another project. You had been busy with Sisters Academy. I had nothing to do. And I was very, like, restless and something needs to happen. And then I think it could also have been Berlin or London or somewhere else.
Yeah.
We had some kind of idea about it would be nice to go to Paris. And then I think for me it was really like, I just need to do something. And then once I told someone about it, and then she was like, yeah, but it's also, you know, moving the body is also, she was also a dancer. Then that's also movement. I was like, yeah, that fits. That's a part of my dance. Mm-hmm. Because other than that, it was really like, we had a few people we knew that we did some, like we worked a little bit for someone, and we had one show at some small event, but basically we just like had a little studio
where we lived, and we had like a very aimless time in Paris, which also I think formed our relationship very much, which I think which translates to the performance and the relationship that we have on stage as well, which is kind of this that we talk about a lot, this indifferent intimacy that we share, that we were always in the same room, and I kind of always knew that Anna was there, but I also didn't really have to pay attention to her. And I think that's very much how we dance together when we go to a studio, when we take a walk, when we make a performance, and when we're on stage. So there's also really a safety because of that. The relationship is so solid in that way that it's also very easy to be on stage with Anna.
You also feel that, like, I know you, but I don't know you that well, but you're really like these calm creatures in my eyes. And you can also feel that the your relationship kind of reflects this. And you see it on stage as well.
So did you already start working on the piece in Paris? When did how did this start? Now we got the idea of the artistic motivation and the inspiration behind doing this. But when did you start? Was it in Paris? Was it and why?
I mean, we had this time in Paris, a little bit aimless, wonderful at times. And then we went to PAF, which is this performing arts forum outside of Paris, which is a place you can go to as an artist or a scholar, an academic. And you just pay, like, it's not very expensive to live there, and then you can work. And there is, like, studios and libraries, and it's in the middle of the countryside, in a little village. And then we went there for a month.
Yeah, maybe even a bit more.
Yeah. And then we had a studio and some piece to work.
Mm.
And then I think it really started. We like going to the studio and working on these things. Then we, yeah.
And we, when you say these things,
these things. Yeah.
Where did it begin from?
Like, yeah, it's hard to remember, but I actually remember we had a shit time. Like, I had been feeling sick, and you had also, like, it was really some down days. And I remember we went, maybe, you know, memory, probably the piece happened before, but we went into the studio, and then I remember just kind of spilling out this, like, melancholy and blah blah blah, and realizing maybe we could actually work with this, because there's always something that's like, but it's emotions and it's personal, like why would that have any kind of relevance for anyone? Like, it's my personal life and I have to separate that from some, to some extent I think you have to separate it. But then I think realizing that maybe we could use this.
Yeah, I think at that point emotions felt kind of unattractive and like a hard topic to enter. We were like, but how can you,
yeah,
with dance and emotions,
yeah,
impossible combination, how can we,
yeah,
like maybe we just shouldn't, but which also made us, this what Anna said, like draw back from that it was not about our personal emotions and it was not really like a researched into that, but of course an awareness that they are just there,
yeah,
hanging with us, it's between us.
Yeah, and this of working with what you got,
yeah,
can be nice, I think.
Yeah,
as an artist, to be like, there's so many things going on in your life, so how can you allow them to be what you do? At least that's a calming factor for me, that I don't have to leave things when I go into the studio.
Yeah, that we never did.
They no, really, it's impossible.
Yeah. All of it followed us,
yeah,
into the studio.
That's a nice point to you cannot really separate,
yeah,
the working space and the personal life. It's kind of,
yeah,
there's a crossover easily.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, I guess different things work for different people. Some people are really good at just like, now I leave this behind, and that works for them. But for us, it's just, it was much easier to be like, okay, obviously there's so many things going on, so let it just be, and then from there you kind of started.
Yeah.
That's when things happened for us, when we could like allow things to be.
Yeah. But the piece is also like, it's maybe, it's not a, in conflict, but the both things exist, these extreme emotions, but also the piece is quite clean, almost clinical, you could say, like how it's made, because it's like, they are very formalized dances. And we have a very simple procedure how we make these dances and how we learn them, and then it's that. It has specific counts, specific directions, and then it's that, in a way. And then how does a dance that is so formal still carry traces of these emotions that were felt when we were first doing them is also...
And
interesting.
Yeah, maybe we should say then, because then this was when we were at PAF, and then we did these music has always been very important for us. That's kind of like what gets you to dance, that's music for us, and I think we just decided to go with that. If that's what makes a dance, then we need music. So then we made this long playlist, and then we called it sessions, and then we actually just improvised to the music. And then we would often, movies were quite important at this time, watching movies, certain movies that we felt hold a certain mood or something that like we could, again a little bit this, sometimes when you watch a movie you can really just like rest into a mood or a feeling or something that you don't have to explain what it is, but you can just kind of like rest into it. And this can be harder to do with performing arts, because there is someone in front of you that is allowing for attention. But then we would watch movies sometimes at least, and then from there go into the improvisation. So again, this of like how to establish a mood to be in, an atmosphere.
And then we would film those sessions.
Yeah.
And then just choose some parts and learn them. So it's very amateur-like approach, which is like kind of liberating actually at this point. So simple.
I would be interested to also hearing some movie titles that have influenced it, since it has been a part of the process.
A Swedish director who made a movie called Farvel Falkenberg. He's called Jesper Gansland. It's not a very known movie, but it's in Falkenberg. Follows a group of boys/men who are still living in this suburban town, and sort of you follow their lives. And then it also has a big amount of sadness to it, because one of them ends up committing suicide. But it's not just sad, it's a very beautiful movie, I think, and you just follow them in this suburban town. And it really has this kind of like nothing happens, which is something else we like to use, that nothing happens. And then, what other movies? Oh yeah, Breaking the Wave. We watched later, Breaking the Waves.
Yeah, kind of at that same time.
Okay.
Which is also like an like the most heartbreaking film there is. But what was very interesting was that, or what we liked about it is that it has these breaks. Like it's so emotionally charged, but then it has like a David Bowie song and a nice landscape for 3 minutes, and you get a break from it. It's just like a whew. And that was also a structure that we were wondering if a performance could have, that we then didn't use in that way, but kind of followed us.
No, we really wanted to make this kind of breaks, like a performance, that a performance is going on and then there is these breaks all the time from it. But that didn't happen.
No.
And I was thinking if you, because perhaps some of our listeners haven't seen your piece, if you can describe it like very objectively, like what happened in the beginning and what do we see or what do we experience as the audience?
Yeah.
Well, perhaps it's difficult for you. But
It might be better if you do it, but we can try. It's on a boat. And it's a black scene.
Well, this one was, but it's not gonna be there again. No. So this time it was on a boat.
True. It's not made for a boat. It just happened to be on a boat.
Yeah.
On a boat theater. And there is a track. There is quite loud music that goes through the whole piece. That kind of starts in this drone kind of like landscape. And then it goes into this kind of electronic loop. How would you describe the music?
Well, like a melancholic rave kind of music. Yes. If you would have that.
Yeah.
So not upbeat, but like loopy, repetitive.
Yeah.
Holds a mood of something that's not really like pinpointed as necessarily sad or emotional, but I think it kind of easily directs the way there.
Yeah.
If you're allowing as an audience to be directed.
Yeah.
That way it kind
for
of
sure.
It is very
it is emotional.
Strong in mood.
Yeah. Strong in mood. And then there's a lot of smoke in the piece, which gives a feeling that the space you can't really see the ends of the space, which is nice. It gives a bit of this endless space. And then we are dressed in sort of light costumes or like clothes, and we dance for the whole piece. And we dance different dances. We start out, we repeat a lot, so we come back to the same dances. But we try not to make it a like kind of like repetition for the sake of repetition, but to give this kind of endless looping. Then we have, like, the dancers are, we are, sometimes we are synchronized, sometimes we are in canon, sometimes we are doing different things, we all sometimes we are actually having more contact, sometimes we're more apart. It's very simple, again. But they are sort of slow, the dances, at least most of them. And then at one point there is this diagonal dance that's more dynamic. It's a little bit of a shift. And it also holds more references to contemporary dance and has like high legs and maybe ballet, a little bit ballet jumps kind of feeling to it. And then there's the laser part also, which also is like the melancholic or the rave feeling. There comes a laser and we dance and it creates this sort of silhouettes with the bodies. And then, yeah, the dancers just continues and then it ends. And then there is a projection of that is in memory of Peter Kazakov, Peter Charles Kazakov. And then it's done.
You talked about the atmosphere of the piece, what happened on stage, and of course light designing has been a part of the process, a part of what we saw as a public. Would you like to say some words about that?
Yeah, we have a really lovely partner as a light designer who came into the team quite late, but we were just very quickly on the same page, actually from the beginning. A Swedish artist called Fabian Newman, who will continue with us also in the future.
Yeah.
And we're really happy to have him with us, because I think without the lights, I don't know, that it just would have been something completely else, of course. But it was also very important for us to have this element of light, and that the light can have its own life as well. And that the light was not always... was not there to light us necessarily, but it was really there as its own element in creating the mood.
And when did you start collaborating, or when did he come into the process?
Late. Yeah.
In January.
Because of of like not very good organization. And I met him at a workshop. I got to know he was a light designer, and I was like, ooh, we were really at that point. We had someone else who had just said, she didn't have time, so we were like, fuck. Because we realized more and more that what was missing in this piece was the light. That would really make it come together, perhaps. And then it ended up that he was like, yeah, okay, I'll help you. And then we're just really lucky that we were on track. And he got our idea of the melancholic rave. And
so can you explain? Explain also for people who haven't seen the piece what happened with the lights.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what Anna mentioned with this endless space that we created with light, it's kind of that together with smoke creates this kind of like fogginess. And then there's a lot of blue and it's very dim in the light. So we also want it to be that sometimes maybe you can't see everything, and that's also a point, that it's maybe not so important to see everything. And we want to create this mood where the audience can just drop in. A bit this what you can do with a film. Like you can kind of just stare at it blankly or cry a little or, you know, move around. But we never demand the attention of the audience. Somehow we really wanted to not feel like the audience was ignored, but in the same way of indifferent intimacy, taking care in that way. And I think the light had also a lot to do with like giving some private space for the audience that's not separate from the piece, but still like, I don't know if it was like that, but maybe you have a little bit of your own room there as an audience member.
Yeah, I definitely experienced that. I remember the beginning you chose to leave us as an audience in the dark for quite a long time.
Yeah, that's true. That also happened in the piece.
Yeah.
So, and that created a space for me where I felt I knew that people were around because I just said hello to everyone in the foyer, but I felt very alone before I the light then came slowly and I could see your moving bodies.
Yeah.
But that was a very strong moment for me to be left alone in the dark space for such a long time.
Yeah.
I think that is really like something that has been absolutely amazing of making this piece and having an audience is to hear what kind of experiences people had. And you just realize that, of course, there's a similarities, but also when you maybe allow a space for you to just sit in the darkness with very loud music or really different things come up. And I think also dancers, as we are, it's interesting to see how they also take it in. Like, we are very open for these things. And it's different what you do, who you are. And I really like that, that you create a piece that really, there is space for the audience.
It was, I don't know, I think it's because I'm thinking about it so much, and you also talked about this, the emotional reactions that the public, some of the audience members had. And I also had it was a very strong piece for me, and I of course I'm not going to cry. Like I'm sitting and his colleagues are around me and I was also in the front row. I mean, of course I'm not going to do it, and then but it somehow happened. But it's because it was very strong, and I also felt like it shocked me that the space allowed it, because I don't and even though it allowed it, I was still very embarrassed about it in the end, because it wouldn't stop.
Yeah.
And it's like, yes, you created a space that allowed that, because it just happened. But the frame of going to the theater is not very welcoming yet.
Yeah.
Whereas a movie theater is, you can go, you cry, and you go out, and that's you still true. See people crying, and it's just, of course, we saw a sad film.
Yeah.
But it's not something that is very common in like a theater experience, a live theater experience.
Yeah.
But I think it's also not very common to collectively cry, and that's something we discussed as well. Like, how could it be? How could the dance hold a space for loss and whatever the shape of the loss is? And not necessarily, maybe it's maybe you can feel someone else crying next to you, and that's like, then you feel someone else, what someone else is going through. But this was also something also personal, like where to find these spaces. And I also don't know if the theater is like the ultimate place to deal with these things collectively, but it was an attempt, maybe, in a way, to create a space for this kind of mourning.
Yeah.
Almost. But as much as maybe we haven't touched it yet so much, but we talk about emotions and this loss and sadness, but the feeling of emptiness, I think, is even was the most present emotion. Maybe for us, and almost this emptiness that doesn't mean nothing, this emptiness that is like an immeasurable sense of something, that is almost like you're not able to even feel it thoroughly. It just kind of takes you. So that, like, that feeling was something also that was with us, this kind of hollowing of self, and how this, you have this together with addressing nothingness, and like nothing happens. Yeah.
No, but nothing happens is almost like the thing that has stayed with us the most.
Yeah. And that nothing happens doesn't mean that something is not happening. And that when we address nothingness, there's already something. And then how do we, through dancing, create nothing happens? And that through, we talked about these breaks before, creating breaks, but creating breaks through dancing, that is just continuous looping of dancing that creates this mood of nothingness or emptiness, or that these dance steps kind of empty themselves the further we go and the more we repeat.
That's nicely said. They empty themselves.
Yeah. As well as like then at this part that Anna said, this diagonal dance where we have more clear references to dance history maybe, mm-hmm. that they also empty themselves. For yeah. sure those references are there, but they don't maybe pay very strong significance. That why not kick a leg really high or do this kind of jump? We're doing other things as well, so maybe after a while when we have established this atmosphere, we can also do those things.
Yeah, that's a good point. So, like, you are able to do these kind of things, like references to dance history, mm. in the end, or like over the half of the performance,
yeah.
because you created this mm. emptiness.
Yeah.
If you did it in the beginning, it will have another significance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very much.
Mm. And I think something that's also maybe we touched it before, but that it's, you know, this diagonal dance that has these references is also like we improvised it one day and then we were like, we really liked it, there was something about it, then we just chose it. And I think there is this, when we work, there's always this that is also just a dance that we just chose because we like it. And then of course we really, it's important for us that when we make it into a piece that it makes sense. This sort of like lightness also, it is just a dance.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is loads of other things as well, but it's also just a dance, and to make space for dancing an hour, make a dance piece. I think that's nice.
That was very clear from the beginning on for you too, that you would like to use the moving body as a medium for this.
Yeah.
Because I mean, of course, you're dance practitioners, but from my experience of you, both of you, you also work with different media.
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yes.
Yeah, and I think that came from a previous piece that we made, that we really decided to insist on dancing, and maybe that finishing an education with lots of also obstacles with dancing itself, then deciding to really come back to it, and find a way that suits us.
Yeah, because there's so many ways of dancing.
Yeah.
And you can really create your own. I mean, we have so much dance history, but you can really find space of the kind of dancing you want to do, I think. If you like to dance, which I really do.
And we have a very clear aesthetic as well.
We
it's
do.
Like,
yeah.
It's kind of, all the dances that we were improvising kind of look the same.
Yeah.
Because it's just like...
yeah. That's also something we just fall into.
Yeah.
We just fall into this kind of dynamic.
Mm.
Not dynamic. Oh, yeah, dynamic. But it's not very dynamic.
No, the
dancing
is not dynamic. But our...
Yeah.
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 Yeah, also this kind of nothing happens.
And it also as an audience... I felt very inspired, like also to dance and move my own body afterwards,
nice.
Because you had this repetition and you were constantly insisting on moving the body, and I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
So thank you for insisting on dance.
Yeah, it feels like that's the way to figure out what relevance it has in the world still now, which is like a big question mark, I think, if it does.
Mm.
I think that's so interesting, because from the beginning on, I think it was you, Anna, that said that it came from a very personal point of departure, the inspiration and the wanting of making a piece about all these things you talked about, but what is the relevance,
mm-hmm.
and how do other people relate, and mm-hmm. how does my work with emotions have an emotional impact? And then it's the questions that you always have as a artist creating stuff. And I can only talk about myself, but your work had a very strong impact on me.
Mm.
And that can be due to, like Marie said, I mean, the repetition and the renewal of the piece, the formalities of it.
Mm.
But what is it that makes art relevant
mm.
in having emotional impact? And I keep thinking that we were both actually in a conference. It was around a year ago where there are a lot of scholars talking about, of course, the relevance of art. And there was this guy that talked about his experience observing a visual arts work where he started crying. And what happens there? What makes us? What hits us at that moment? And of course, it also has to do so much with the circumstances and the personal history and the subjectivity of the experience. But then there are also songs, like he talked about, and I wish I could remember the name of the scholar. Unfortunately, I cannot. He was talking about on YouTube, you can write like 100 songs that will definitely make you cry. So that it's like, it's the intention of making some kind of artifact that touches some particular emotional or intellectual, triggers something, either emotional or intellectual. And then you listen to these 100 songs that are supposed to make you cry, and of course you don't cry. But so it's like, what does, what creates this relevance and what creates this impact? And I know it's probably, it's a very hard question to ask, but I would like to put it on the table if you have anything to say about what you think made this piece relevant and with a strong emotional impact to your audience.
I think there is something about the absence, at least that's what I have experienced in previous works, on maybe not works, but maybe just life, that some feeling of that there is something very strong going on that really touches you, but there is some, no, this is wrongly put. I think I'll start somewhere else. I was listening to a podcast also when we were in Paris about also now I don't have really the best info, but she was some kind of art academic critic, and she was talking, Andrea Fraser, I think she's called, and she was talking about, it was like a lecture she has held about a piece that had made her weep, and I don't remember the name of the, it was a visual artist, but anyway, it was about how absence, it had been some kind of piece with like just very minimal things, and a lot of space for it, just kind of nothing, and it had made her weep. And that really made me think of how it's often the things that are absent, or some kind of like, feeling of something that has been here or what is not here. And I think we have this, there is some kind of distance also in the, like, also this indifferent intimacy, that I think the dancers have these more grand movements, or like I have my arms out and Amalia is doing this like with her hands, and they are sort of like epic in a way, but they are also not overdone, and they are maybe, they still hold a kind of distance to the grand emotion. And also when we touch each other, it's very minimal how we touch each other. And I think maybe I'm a little bit away from the Christian now, but I wanted to mention something about the absence. And the question was like, how, if we would talk a bit about how, what?
I don't know, I don't even really know what the question was. It was probably not very clear, but it was because it's very hard for me to formulate this thing that that makes an impact, and why art is relevant, and how can you, from a personal point of departure, reach someone else.
Yeah.
Because, it's not a very direct transmission of my thoughts, my ideas, my emotions to the audience. That's never it.
Yeah.
How, what makes the process into something that...
I think also if we talk about dance, like what's the relevance of dance, even though dance can be many things, not just moving bodies. But I think there is something about spending an hour without words and still feeling emotional. Like the capacity for movement and bodies and relations to move you. I think dance is very, or that's where I see that dance has a big potential, different from movies or theater that uses words
and narratives, like like it's stories between human beings, and where in moving bodies or in dance, it's we can sense a story perhaps, or we can interpret a story, but it's not set in words, so it's not like a concrete narrative as in movies could be.
Yeah, and I think that's also what gives the audience this feeling afterwards of I didn't know that I was gonna cry, it just came to me, and this sort of like that you don't know why. I really like that, that it's just something happens and you can't really pinpoint what it is. It's not like I watch a movie and then the person died in the end, or but there is all these things, unsaid or like non-verbal things, pre-language things happening, that it's nice to find a space for them. And I think that can do something.
And maybe the piece also works on in a way of hollowing, like hollowing also layers of like in these loops, like of just keep, it just keeps on going and it keeps on emptying, and there are slight traces of maybe intimacy and then it's gone, or there's darkness. And I wonder if this also like peels layers of from the audience to feel this vulnerability. Because I have to say that even though we worked with these things, it was never, it was not like we didn't work in a way of let's make it sad, let's make people cry. Maybe it was a wish, like, you know, a fantasy, like this would be amazing, like this we would love personally. But I think it's also hard to predict this, and like also to like come up with a recipe of like how to make people cry is also like, I still, it's a bit of a mystery to me. And when we got these people coming to us crying, it was so
like, what?
But it was so, it was really like the most incredible thing that could have ever happened.
It was extremely wild.
But we were also like surprised.
Yeah.
And I also wonder, like, I have to say I'm not a very spiritual person, even though I wish I maybe was. But what is it like in the fabric, in the fibers? Like that it's been so much in the making, and that this piece has been going on for kind of a year, a little bit more, then how, what, how does it actually come out as, like, how did it come out as sad to some? Also not to everyone. This is also very important that we never wanted to insist and, like, to alienate people with that also, like,
why didn't you cry?
Yeah, exactly. Like, this was the intention.
Yeah.
And you failed as an audience. really, truly not.
So we were very kind of humbled by the reactions. Yeah, you sort of lose track when you're making a piece, I think, by the end, if you are very busy before the premiere. You're like, I remember asking you some days before the premiere, you think it will be sad? It's like, no, probably not. I was like, no, probably not. Because you just, you had all these intentions and ideas, and then you're so busy with the dances and they're very just like repeating, making things come together, that you're like, it's probably not anything of the things we talked about. You know, you lose it. I think it, it happens so often in processes, like just before the premiere, you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we was just wild to experience the impact it had.
And other plans with this particular piece?
Yes, but not right now we're really in the process of like making a trailer.
We have a dialogue with a venue, but that's also not confirmed, another thing. So they're like things in the making.
Yeah
That's great. Like, also to, like, now you have this beautiful piece, and just to get it out there.
Yeah. We finally got good material, like film material and pictures, which we've been very lousy at before. So now we can actually send material.
And can we also expect other works from you?
Oh yes.
Yes, you can. We're going, actually, we're having a project in a mine in Sweden, in a town with only 100 people where there's a residency. And we've been invited to come as artists and make a new work there, which we will perform in August. So
in,
we will make a new
Sweden
piece.
Or
in Sweden?
Yeah, it will be there.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's very based on the context around
there.
But it would be nice for us to get a... Because this we have been working on for a long time now, and I really want to continue and show this as many places as possible. But it's also nice sometimes to get at, like, someone has already made a context for you, and there's sort of a task in that way, and then they invite you as artists too. I think it would be nice for us to get a bit of a different context to be in.
Mm. I would like to ask you if you could, like, now you already shared some movie titles that inspired your work,
yeah.
But perhaps you can share with us any inspirations that has affected you in your work, or as you creating you as an artist.
Mm. I think if we talk about dance, we are both big fans of Mette Edvardsen, Norwegian choreographer. And I think there's no like direct links to why she is or we really like her work, but I think she has also an amazing way of kind of using very simple but very complex tools, or like how she uses language and how she... I also get a feeling of this, like Amanda talked about, this unlayering, kind of like getting to things. And yeah, I guess also how she works with time and something very calm in how she does things.
And it's very composed as well, like our piece. Also, like, yeah, I mean, she, with her, it's even more, I think, precise. Yeah. Yeah, we're really big fans, actually. Then we did, for sure, read Cultural Politics of Emotion by Sarah Ahmed, also to kind of withdraw from this, like, or to think of emotions as something... that connects us politically as well. That was a part of our shaping in thinking and
she
working.
Has, she's just really nice with language, I think. It's almost like it's a movement, how she writes. And how she writes about bodies and borders and these things. Again, I think there's no direct link, but it was something that was with us, that we read during the process. It's nice to have these books that can just... It's something that you read, but you don't have to translate it into a piece, but it definitely informs you.
And we were on a small island where we were, like, sort of working on this piece, but didn't actually really work on it, but we were
really tried.
We tried, but I think it was a very important time for the piece. But nothing actually came,
nothing
like concrete came out of
it.
It was a really, really tiny island with an artist residency in the north of Norway.
Røst, it's called
the residency.
The residency.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there we read Virginia Woolf to the Lighthouse.
She's just a really nice writer. And this, how she just goes in and out of all these layers also, of consciousness and life. And again, no direct link, but just very inspiring.
Thank you for sharing your references. I will definitely go home and look some of the things up.
Nice. Glad to hear.
Yeah, so thank you for
thank you.
Taking your time to share your work with us.
Thank you very much for inviting us.
Yes, thank you.
And for doing this podcast.
Mm.
Great. You're welcome.
Yes.
Thank you for listening to Everyone We Wish You Knew. We are very excited to share this project with you, and just stay updated for the next episodes.
Yeah.